Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast, edition one of 2021. Last year, 46 episodes. Didn't do too badly, James. James is back on the merry-go-round for another spin. I think, if I'm not mistaken, James, I could be wrong on this, but I think you played every minute of last season's podcast, maybe apart from the women's special. Would that be right? Or did you have a missed occasion?
Did I? No, I don't think I did. Did I? Thanks for reminding me how desperate last year was. My poor people having to listen to me every minute of it.
Oh no, you bring such wisdom and what would be an otherwise shambolic podcast. You keep us on the straight and narrow. But then again, maybe you're available on a free transfer in January. So look, don't worry about it.
Thanks, if you get a better offer, go for it. The checks in the post.
Yeah, you go for it. Well, also with us today, Conan Byrne. Congratulations to Conan, who won the Liam Toohey Special Merit Award for his acts of charity. That award given by the Soccer Writers Association of Ireland. Of course, Conan did the marathon walk around Dublin last year from ex-club ground to ex-club ground. And also, of course, that raised so much money for the Irish Cancer Society, and then was also involved in organising phone conversations between League of Ireland players and fans in a bid to lift spirits of people during the ongoing pandemic. So well done on that award. Were you surprised to receive it, Conan?
Oh, obviously, yeah, absolutely. It was a great honour because you've seen some of the names that have been on that Liam Toohey award over the years. And I've brought down the average age anyway.
well merited, Conan, no doubt about it. But at the moment, no football for you, no football in the Irish League at the moment. A 2-week suspension. Tell us about that and the background to it.
Yeah, look, it's a bit of a mess up in Northern Ireland, Adrian, and it has been for the last number of weeks and months. I suppose as players, we've just been disappointed that we haven't been talked to by the league, and the players' union up there actually did a survey recently asking, for the first time since this pandemic started, our opinion on it. And like we don't get tested at all. We just get temperature checked when we go through at grounds. But I've never been tested, and I think that's outrageous. The fact that I have been in playing different my contacts up north, obviously with training and playing games, sitting on the bench most times, but still up there. It's not what it should be. We should be tested at least once a week to make sure that things are safe, and that we are safe, and that we're not bringing any disease or virus back home with us. Because like we all, Glenavon, they're a part-time club, so we all have jobs outside of that. So you can only imagine if one of our players contracted the virus, where we would be bringing it to. So I think that it testing needs to be brought in, and needs to be brought in very, very quickly. So yeah, you did mention there that we are on a 2-week break at the moment, and look, we don't know whether or not that's going to be extended or what, but it's just the situation that it is up there.
Would you anticipate that it would be extended given the high numbers in the north at the moment?
I don't know. If you're asking the players, I think they probably would like to see an extension of maybe just another couple of weeks. I think though that if they brought in testing, I think that would alleviate any fears that the players may have of going back to training or going back to play games. I think that's just a basic requirement. That we did it down here in the League of Ireland last season, and it worked really, really well. Happens across the water in Britain, and there's no reason why it can't happen up north. And if that was brought in, I think players would be happy to go back to play, to train and to play games.
It seems like a no-brainer. Why has there been no testing?
I think it all comes down to money, Adrian, doesn't it? Or whether it's a lax attitude to it up within the league. You see, I wouldn't be as involved in the league up there or have any people that I could talk to to get more information from. I can only talk to the players that are in the dressing room, and temperature check doesn't really work, does it? Like, if you could have COVID-19 whilst having a normal temperature, it's you could be carrying it, and it's just, you could be asymptomatic. So it's just it's it's not a great way of handling things when there's so many contacts within the league. And look, a number of our players have tested positive since the outbreak back in January, last January. And yet we haven't had to self-isolate or restrict our movements up until now. And it only happened because we played Linfield on the 2nd of January and we've had to restrict our movements from that day. We got a letter last week to say that we had to restrict our movements until Tuesday, which is today. So, it's just been... and that's from another player at another club that tested positive. Whereas we've had players in our dressing room that have tested positive where legally we haven't had to self-isolate, which is crazy in my opinion.
Okay, all right. Listen, we'll move on. We're going to chat on the podcast today about some of the stories of the week. Duff departs Ireland, Mick departs Apoel Nicosia, and we'll be chatting to Dane Massey, who has departed Dundalk and has now signed for near neighbours Drogheda United, and also to Marie Curtin, who departs the Women's National League scene after so many years of great service. So a lot of departing going on at the moment. But let's go to Dane Massey. Dane has made the move from Dundalk to Drogheda United. I'm delighted to say he's on the line. Dane, thanks very much, first of all, for joining us on the RT Soccer Podcast. I know that you said leaving Dundalk, it was with a heavy heart that you were leaving the club. You were with Bray Wanderers before joining Dundalk in 2013. So you were in your mid-20s when you went to Dundalk from Bray Wanderers. Could you have ever imagined the success that you would have at Dundalk?
Thanks a million for having me on, first of all.
No bother?
Yeah, as I said, look, I signed for Dundalk in my mid-20s. And the journey it's took me on has been amazing, you know. Two group stages in Europe, league titles, FAI Cups, all the trophies I've won. So yeah, it was really it's really nice to look back on. I haven't had the opportunity to look back on all the titles and the cups that we've won, and it's been an absolutely amazing journey, and I've been incredibly lucky as well.
Yeah, five league titles, all those FAI Cups as well. In a way, it's the end of a special time in your life, and perhaps the end, to a certain degree, the end of an era for Dundalk, because there's been so much change because you've moved on. Obviously, Sean Gannon is going to Shamrock Rovers, John Mountney to Pats, Gary Rogers is hanging up the gloves as well. So there's a real changing of the guard going on at Dundalk at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. Look, we went into the end of the season this year and was 15, 16 players out of contract, and I think a lot of the players knew at the time that it was inevitably going to happen. So obviously the lads start looking after themselves and speaking to managers from other clubs around the league, and I had to do that myself. And I was just fortunate enough that Tim and Kevin reached out and they told me their plans for the season, and that they're building a squad and it's an exciting time at the club, and I was only too happy to get on board. And I feel myself it's going to be a great challenge and one that I'm definitely looking forward to.
Dane, this season, obviously, it was your last at Dundalk, but it was just interrupted by that injury. How difficult was it for you for the whole season, or most of the season, watching on from the sidelines?
Yeah, it was incredibly frustrating. You know, obviously, Vinny had left during the summer, and Filippo came in, and he had a new regime training and stuff. And I was fortunate enough to play the first game from. We played Cove away in the Cup, and I got off to a cracking start. I scored, and we won the game 2-0, and I was flying in training, and I've never had an issue with injury before in my career, and one of the days in training, I tore my rec fem, so I had to have surgery. The kind of recovery time to let it heal naturally or have surgery was the same amount, so I chose the surgery route, and I missed out on the rest of the season. Now, I came back, I healed quicker than everyone expected, and I was fit, but unfortunately, I wasn't put into the squad in the semi-finals of the FAI Cup, which I was hopeful to make. But it was something that I had to get over. I had never had an injury, as I said, in my career, and it was a challenging year for myself mentally, you know, working out on my own in the gym. And I was fortunate enough to have a great physios there at Dundalk, Dave Murphy and Danny there, who was involved with the FAI as well. So the lads really looked after me, and it was a challenging year, but look, it was a successful year for the club as well.
Dane, it's Colin here. I remember playing, seeing you train at UCD when you were a young lad, when I was there, and seeing the technical ability that you brought in at such a young age, did you always believe in your ability then when you went to Bray and then eventually signing for Dundalk and then going forward from there?
Yeah, we remember that, Conan. We were training at UCD, and you know, that was a massive eye-opener for me. You know, you had the likes of Connor Salmon there, Gary Dickers. It was a great squad of players there, yourself. The quality was amazing, and it was a real eye-opener, as I said. And for me, going on from that UCD team, it was like, I can play at this level. I was confident in myself, I was confident in my ability, but I just needed to find, like all players, you need to find somewhere that shows you a bit of love. And that's where I went to Bray, Pat Devlin, you know, yourself, he's a great man, and he had the faith, and he put me in. Himself and Eddie Gormley were there, and they put me in from a young age, and I spent great seasons there, and I learned the hard way as well. You know, Bray were obviously at the other end of the league. We were fighting relegation early every year, so it was a good learning experience for myself, and I firmly believed in myself. I backed myself, always did, and I suppose having confidence throughout was huge for me.
Yeah, and Dane, the talent was obviously there, but Stephen Kenny obviously spotted something in particular in you. How big an impact has he had on your career in terms of developing you as a player?
Yeah, he's had a massive effect on my career personally as well. Like, I always say this, like, the first time I ever met Stephen Kenny, he rang me, and we went up for a chat up in Tala there in the Plaza Hotel, and I can remember the first time we sat down with him. For the first 20 minutes, he didn't mention one word about football. He was asking me about my family, where I went to school, what do I do in my spare time. He was kind of getting to know me and getting to know the person that I was. And I think that's what made him such a successful manager, that he signed a lot of good people and people that were willing to work hard. And as you see from Dundalk, then the first year, I think, Conan, we ran yourself, Pat's close that year. And that was our first year together as a team. Like, it was a whole new team. Like, so it was difficult. It was a difficult year for us, but it kind of made us for the following years to go on and win all those trophies.
It was the only time we got the better of you, Dane. Jeez. I suppose you're just picking up on it there. Like, the camaraderie in a dressing room at Dundalk always seemed to be very, very good. How important is that in your opinion?
Yeah, it's huge. It's vital, really. You know, when you want to challenge to win trophies and cups, like, you can't have little cliques in one corner of a change room. You need to be all working together, essentially playing as a plan. Like, the manager has a plan, everybody should be working and pulling together towards that goal. You can't have any bad eggs. You know, you're obviously going to have some in the change room that, oh look, I'm not happy, I'm not playing. But I think at that time it was so competitive, that change room. We were all working towards the same goal, that we all had each other's back, and we were very close, extremely close, really. And I think it had a huge effect on why we were so successful, is because we were all so close with each other.
And obviously that generated a great culture, because going back a few years, you could pretty much say for certain the back five for Dundalk tonight would be Gary Rogers, Sean Gannon, Gartland, Andy Boyle and yourself. And obviously in more recent years, you know, Sean Hoare has come in and Cleary as well. But, you know, those first couple of years, it was those five players I mentioned nailed on, including you.
Yeah. Like, that was right throughout the squad as well. Like, he had his core there. And once he had his core then over the years, then he'd only sign two or three players to strengthen and make the squad that bit more competitive, which overall would bring the team on and make it more successful. So there was never any years that, like, Jesus, he'd sign six players, say. He'd always add two or three quality players, and that was it for his off-season signings. You know, he'd never have a massive amount of signings through the year. You know, he'd always just add that two or three.
Who was your most competitive player, Dane, in that position? Who did you have to keep out more than anybody else?
Well, look, Darragh Lee, he's obviously there now, and he was there last year when I was there, and he's a great young lad. He's with the Irish under-21s and all, but he's extremely good, and I'm sure he'll have a great career. But probably for me, myself, was probably Dean Jarvis. You know, Dean's an excellent player. He came down from Derry. I think the season before he left, I think we were playing 50-50 games. You know, I was in a couple of weeks, and then he was in. But we had a great relationship as well, you know. But yeah, Dean was an excellent player. I think he's playing with Larne now up north, up with Conan. But yeah, he's a good player, yeah.
Yeah, he's a good player, but I remember when I used to see your name on the team sheet day, and I was like, I'm going to be getting hit with this free kick that you always used to do, and it always paid off. It was a free kicking around the halfway line, and I was like, and I was always told, right, stay on Dane, otherwise he's just going to get his head on this and put it across the box and a simple tap in for the lads. How that worked so often, even though probably every club in the country knew it was going to happen, but how come it worked so often for you as at Dundalk?
I suppose, Colin, every Thursday we'd have like a set piece session, and Stephen, you know, he's the smaller details in the game is where he comes in. Like he works tirelessly on it and thoroughly as well, you know. So every Thursday we'd do that free kick on the halfway line. Chris Shields or Andy Boyle would knock it out to me, and I'd do this one. It'd be the same with the set piece in the corner. We'd do a block at the front post, and every team in the league knew what was going to happen, but they just couldn't stop it. We just had it off to a T, and we were able to perform, and the quality was there. It's all about the ball as well. But look, once you have a group of players that know their jobs, it's hard to stop, you know, yourself, Conan.
Yeah, I found it very difficult to stop. Even I remember like trying to push you, stand on your feet, nudge you, tried everything, but it still wasn't happening for me.
And now, folks, we're getting another side of Conan Byrne, standing on an opposition player's toes at set-piece. And we thought you were just a silky winger, Conan. We'll have to take that special merit award away from you now. I haven't heard that. Dane, when things weren't going well for Dundalk, and obviously most of the time it was plain sailing for Dundalk, but say you were having a ropey night at half time, what was Stephen like in the dressing room on those kind of nights?
Yeah, geez, if we were having an off night, he wouldn't be one to shy away and point a finger at someone. Like he'd go through you, really. You definitely didn't want to be on the other end of Stephen when he's not happy. He'd go through lads, and it'd be a wake up call, really, and then he'd be looking for a reaction then in the second half, which probably more than likely he got. So look, when things weren't going well, you knew what was going to happen at half time. He wasn't one to shy away, and he wasn't afraid to let you know that you were having an off day or get the finger out, you know.
It's been a difficult start for him, of course, with the Republic of Ireland. 8 games played, still looking for the first win. Do you feel he's the man to turn it around?
Yeah, I think since he's come in, he's been extremely unlucky, especially with the COVID stuff, and he's been hit hard with that, you know, with depleted squads, and now this week Damien Duff's leaving his backroom team, which will have a huge effect on his teams going forward. You know, Damien was such a iconic profile to have in his backroom team as well. You know, he's very approachable, and the players know his past and his experience, and would give him a lot of respect for that. I'm hearing he's a great coach. You can see what he's doing at Celtic and at Shamrock Rovers. He was moved up the lines fairly quick, so he'll be a massive loss. But look, sure, Stephen's had that throughout his career, even with players and staff, so I'm sure he'll replace it well. So yeah, look, I think it's only a matter of time before things start to come right for him. You look at the 21s, we have a lot of great players coming through and a lot of potential. And I definitely think he's the right manager to bring these players in and introduce them into the senior level.
And Dane, all the leagues that we mentioned, the Cups, and obviously success, apart from Stephen, under Vinnie Perth as well, but of all the days and all the games and all the nights, is there one particular highlight for you from your time at Dundalk, or a special moment or a game that stands out? Anything, you know, if you had to nail down one particular highlight, what would it be, or is that too difficult a question to answer?
No, there is. There's definitely one that stands out for me personally. It's the Bate game in Talla. We obviously went out of Champions League the year previous to Bate Borisov. They were just a great team, you know. And obviously that year, it was 2016, we qualified. We were losing 1-0. We went over to Belarus and we got absolutely hammered over there. We didn't touch the ball for 90 minutes. We came round. We had to play them in Talla then, and we were 1-0 down, and I think Stephen O'Donnell and Stephen Kenny, we all got together and said, look, we can either go out on a whim or we can give it our all here. And fortunately for us, we went 3-0, we won 3-0, and it was an amazing night. It was an amazing night for the league, and I'll never forget the night in Talla. It was lashing rain and the stands were full. It was an unbelievable atmosphere at the ground as well, and it was one that probably I'll never forget.
Brilliant. Well, a new chapter, of course, as you mentioned, about to start now with Drogheda United. You were talking about Tim Clancy and his ambitions for the club. How excited are you about taking on the challenge of Drogheda United? And I guess as well, dare I say it, early 30s, now 32 years of age. Would you see yourself now as playing a key role in the Drogheda dressing room in terms of your experience and the experience that you've garnered both in Europe and in League of Ireland, that you have to perform to a level and to lead by example with a club that has a mix of experienced players and younger players?
Shane got on to me before Christmas Day and he's been on to me the whole time, and he's been telling me about a squad, and I knew previously that they'd done really well in the first division last year, and how exciting the squad are. They're young, they're hungry, and obviously Kevin's there as well as right hand man. So look, they have a great squad, and he was telling me about his plans, and it hit home with me. It kind of reminded me of my early days in Dundalk, like, do I want to get involved with this again? And I had a real good feel good factor about it, and obviously I met the chairman then on the weekend, and he was just like excited about this group of players that are there, and I kind of want to be a part of that. And as you said, look, I'm experienced, and if I can help him out in any way, if I can be like the Stephen O'Donnell, I don't have half as much as quality as Stephen did, but if we can be the Stephen O'Donnell of that group of players, it'd be amazing, and I'm looking forward to it, as I said, and hopefully now we can push on and surprise a few people this year.
Yeah, well, listen, the very best of luck with it. Can we look forward to set-piece routines with you at the back post peeling away and the likes of the Drogheda version of Gartland arriving to meet the ball when it's knocked across the area?
Yeah, look, I'm sure, look, we'll be competitive, and we're going to give it a lash anyway, because we've nothing to lose. Young lads there, hungry lads, and look, honestly, I can't wait for it to start, and I'm really looking forward to the new season starting whenever it does.
Okay, well, listen, Dane, the best of luck with it. Thanks very much for joining us on the RT Soccer Podcast. That's Dane Massey. Conan, great acquisition for Drogheda United, newly promoted back to the Premier Division. What a signing.
A tremendous signing, and a signing that I didn't see coming, being totally honest. I thought Dane would have either stayed at Dundalk or gone with a more recognised Premier Division outfit and higher up the table, let's say. But just listening to what he was talking about there, this is like 2012 all over again for him in his eyes, that going up to a club that some see as a sleeping giant. And Drogheda have that. They have a very, very good people at the board level. Conor Hoey in charge, and obviously the management team of Tim and Kev at the helm has been very, very successful so far. The players that they've got on board, as Dane said, a young, hungry group of players. I've seen them in the flesh over the last couple of years, and they're really, really good players. So there's no reason why Drogheda can't consolidate themselves this year in the Premier Division and move forward, because they certainly have the resources to do that, both on the pitch but also off it as well. So I think it's a very shrewd move by Dane to stay on the M1 and to continue his career with Drogheda.
James, one of the stories he mentioned there, the departure of Damien Duff from the Irish setup. Were you surprised on hearing that news?
Yeah, I think along with everybody else, I was quite surprised that Damien would just walk away from the setup. Obviously, as we know, Damien isn't one that will come and do a press conference about this kind of stuff. He kind of keeps everything to himself. So we're still wondering exactly what the reasoning behind his leaving the setup was. Now, what we do know is that when he was on the Champions League with RTE, he did mention the video and the investigation behind that video and how he thought it was nonsense. So I don't know whether that played into it as well. He does have a role at Shelburne at the moment with the under-8 setup. I don't know whether he's going to step up to have more of a role there, and that might be the reasoning behind it. But yeah, as Dane mentioned there himself, he said it'd be a bit of a blow to Stephen, and one that he could have done without.
Yeah, it is a blow, isn't it, Conan? Because the general consensus, and certainly you don't hear too much from any given dressing room, but certainly the soundings are that he was very highly regarded by the Irish players, and indeed from his time at Celtic, very highly regarded by the Celtic players.
He's highly regarded everywhere he's gone throughout his career, both as a player and as a coach. This will be a huge loss, Adrian, being totally honest. He's highly thought of and respected within the dressing room. And it's not just because of the career that he had. Some people think that just because when you're a coach or manager, people look back on your career and say, oh, well, because he's had a good career, he's a great coach. That's not the way it works. It's because of the attention to detail that Damien has and as Dane said there, he listens to people. He's very approachable. And look, he's straight as a die, isn't he? He didn't like the way things was handled over the video. And he's walked. But yeah, it's going to be a huge loss. He's done magnificent work over at Shamrock Rovers, first and foremost, when he went in. And then when Celtic took him up, he went straight up from the academy very, very early on to the first team. Very highly thought of there. And when Stephen brought him into the international setup, it was the same again. Like, he's just really, really highly thought of. But you can see from it, even when, like, I know we don't get the ins and outs of it because we're not involved in his teams. But his attention to details and analysis on RTE as well when he's on is brilliant. You could watch him all day and listen to him all day with the analysis that he gives us. And yeah, he's going to be a big loss to Stephen Kenny.
Mick McCarthy, James, just a couple of months in the job at Apoel Nicosia, gone. Four straight defeats and gone within a couple of hours of Jack Byrne coming off the bench and making his debut. Tricky one for Jack Byrne, having made the move, but obviously as a professional player, he's to get on with his career. He's signed a contract with Apoel Nicosia, but it's going to be difficult for Jack Byrne now, isn't it? Because he's going to be seen by fans of Apoel Nicosia as a Mick McCarthy man in their ranks. So he's got a lot to prove now in Cyprus, doesn't he?
I think he had a lot to prove prior to Mick McCarthy being sacked, to tell you the truth. I've been to Apoel Nicosia. I've seen them play. I've seen what their fans are like, and they are absolutely fanatical. So he was going to have a lot to prove anyway, coming from the League of Ireland, because they wouldn't have seen the League of Ireland as a league at all, to tell you the truth, Apoel. They're so far up. They were year in, year out qualifying for Champions League. As you mentioned, Mick has lost four in a row. It puts them just above the relegation zone. I think it's a shortened season in Cyprus this year as well. So he's under a lot of pressure. It probably didn't help. I know Jack came on quite late in the game, but a couple of hours later, like before midnight that night, you hear that the manager's been sacked. It's not a great start for Jack. It's obviously a big blow to Mick McCarthy as well. And because at the end of the day, he's a professional manager. He's looking for a good job. He thought he could go there and do stuff with all the money behind them. The facilities behind them is very, very good as well. And as I said, that fanatical support as well. So the money's there. It's just, sometimes it just doesn't work out. But hopefully for Jack now, he gets a couple of games under his belt. He seems to be doing well in training. I've seen some stuff coming out from them, videos and that from them in training. He seems to be doing well there. So hopefully Jack can push on and it does help his career, because I think the style of football that Apoel play will suit Jack more than anything in the UK would have suited him.
Conan, what did you make of events in Cyprus last week?
Look, I'd kind of be looking at the other side of it. I actually think it'll benefit Jack. We all know Mick McCarthy's style of play, and it's not easy on the eye. And with the way Apoel like to play, it will suit Jack down to the ground. Now, I don't think he would have gone over there. I'm sure before signing the contract, he knew Mick McCarthy's job was under threat, considering the stuff that was coming out in the media and also their form. So I don't think this had much to do with signing for Mick McCarthy. I think this was more to do with a league that will suit Jack Byrne's style and technique. And he's an international footballer. He didn't look out of place. He was one of the best players on the pitch when AC Milan went to Tala. So I don't think this is going to affect Jack Byrne too much. And like I said there, I actually think it's going to probably better Jack, get him on the ball an awful lot more. And I'm sure that it's going to be a good move for Jack, seeing the back of Mick, which is not a nice thing to say, but I think it will benefit him.
Yeah, but presumably, Conan, Mick wanted Jack in the team, and he knows what Jack Byrne brings to the table. So you'd have to assume he'd be looking for a player like Jack Byrne to get on the ball and dictate things. That I know there's this, you know, this philosophy that Mick McCarthy has, that, you know, he doesn't necessarily play attractive football. I think he would probably reject that. So in many respects, are you being a bit unfair on Mick McCarthy in suggesting that he employs just one style of football, that he wouldn't accommodate the likes of Jack Byrne in a team like Apoel?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that this new manager seems to have a different philosophy in terms of managing and coaching and playing. And I think that philosophy will suit Jack more than Mick's. Mick is very, very successful. He has done wonders for Irish football and bringing us to the World Cup, and nearly getting us to the Euros. But I just think for, I'm just talking about Jack Byrne here, and I think that the new manager has come in. If he takes to Jack, and who wouldn't, given his the way he plays, I think that'll benefit him even more than Mick being a manager.
James O'Toole, the FA Cup third round weekend. I gather you absolutely love it.
I love the FA Cup.
Why?
It's the only thing. I'm one of the strange people. I've heard people all week on the radio talking about how the FA Cup is rubbish and how they don't like the FA Cup, etc. I love it. It is literally, Adrian, bar the League of Ireland, obviously, it's the only football that goes on in this house over Christmas, especially over the Christmas break. The games late December, early January, third round and stuff like that. It's always absolutely fantastic. I love it. Absolutely love it.
And is it the non-league element, Chorley knocking out Derby County, Crawley knocking out Leeds? Is it that, you know, the muddy pitches and all that goes with it?
Yeah, it is a bit like that. Like, if you think back, can you, I'm sure you can, Conan, you're not going to remember this, let's be honest. One of the first ones I can ever remember, right, was 1991 FA Cup, Liverpool versus Blackburn. I'm sure you remember this. Jimmy Hill was commentating on the game. And Liverpool 1-0 down, but only, it must have been even in the 90th minute. Ball goes out, and the ball girl hands the ball as quick as anything to Steve Nicol. Steve Nicol takes the throw in, Liverpool equalise. Whole stand goes absolutely, Blackburn goes absolutely mental. But it's games like that where Blackburn at the time would have been classed as underdogs, really, really big underdogs against that Liverpool team. And it's just unbelievable. It's games like that where you think you're on the pit of the collar, or even one shortly after that, I think it was 92, 93 maybe, Wrexham knocking out Arsenal.
That's right, yeah.
Mickey in the Thomas. FA Cup,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like games like that, it's the, and then you see the likes of Chorley, who obviously manager originally for playing with Killarney Celtic or Killarney United. Do you know, there's little stories in these games. Even Marine the other night, 25,000 virtual tickets sold for the game. I think it's just wonderful. I think it's great for small clubs to be able to play in it and get a chance to play in it. And then once they get to that third round, if they can get a good draw into the fourth round, it's basically like us looking at the Europa League for our teams here. But I really, really love it. I love the atmosphere around it. I used to love, it's gone away from it now, but again, Conan, you won't remember this, you're too young. The BBC on the morning, the FA Cup used to start at about 12 o'clock and
how
build up right the way up through the day.
It's around about 21 here. I'm loving this.
You won't remember Saint and Greavesy, let's be honest.
I can remember the FA Cup starting at 12 o'clock and just sitting in front of the TV with me dad. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
yeah, great days.
Are you a fan of the FA Cup, Conor?
I love the feel-good stories of the FA Cup. Like, and see, and there was a lot over the weekend. Like John O'Sullivan, obviously, with COVID-19 over the Christmas coming on against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. I love the story about Nicholas Torella. I don't know if I'm saying that properly, but he was very, very emotional after his goal against Leeds, for Crawley against Leeds. Yeah, what a strike. But he's in a car crash, was out for a year, got released by Spurs, and then to come back and do that again in an FA Cup game with everybody, with you know, like, as James would like to think, the whole world watching. and then Charlie obviously defeating Derby, but not just on the pitch, but then in the dressing room after with the Adele song. It was brilliant, great feel-good stuff. But then probably the one which kind of touched me the most was Declan Thompson, the Sheffield Wednesday player. He was in a wheelchair for a year, told he'd probably never walk again. And coming off the bench, and there was stuff on Twitter seeing his dad didn't realise that he was going to come on, and then saw an image just of him on the side of the pitch about to come on. And yeah, it was just really, they're the type of stories, the feel-good stories I love, and about the FA Cup, and obviously the underdogs defeating the David and Goliath stories. Yeah, they're nice too, although there wasn't much this time around apart from the Chorley game.
The magic of the Cup, it can be magical, no doubt about that. Okay, let's move on. One of the players who won't feature in the Women's National League this year is Marie Curtin. What a career. Marie is with us on the line. Irish international and a playing career that included Cork, Galway, Limerick, most recently, of course, Treaty United in the Women's National League. Also played in the USA and Norway. You've decided to call it quits, Marie. Why so? Is it just a case of the creaky bones, or what's the thinking?
Thanks for getting me on. It's a pleasure. Yeah, look, I suppose I've been around Limerick the last few years, and to be honest, I could have hung up the boots in the last couple of years, but you know, a team in the Women's National League landed on my doorstep, so I couldn't really say no. So I had to get involved, and it's been an absolute pleasure. It's great to have something right here in Limerick. I want to see it for the younger players as well, that they have opportunities. I suppose I've always gone away to play at a high level, so it's nice that we're starting something new here, and long may it continue, and hopefully the women's team will flourish there as well.
Are you going to stay involved in football at some level?
Hopefully. I've done my UEFA B about 2 years ago, so I've been edging to get into coaching more so ever since. I suppose I have done a bit of coaching in the line of the technical stuff. I've worked a little bit with Cover coaching, and so yeah, I'm very much focused on the technical game, and done a lot kind of one-on-one with players as well, or in groups. So I'm very inclined in that side, so I do look forward to coming in on a coach from that side. But yeah, I definitely hope to stay involved anyway. I just want to see the club grow in Limerick. It's fantastic to see.
Yeah, Marie, it would have been such an unlucky odd for you. We're kind of unlucky, realistically, losing the semi-final to Cork. But what a way it would have been to go out if Treaty had got to their first cup final.
Yeah, that's it. Like, we had a good run in the cup, all right. That game was yeah, it's such a pity we ran out in the end. We had such a good second half. I got a dead leg myself at about 20 minutes in, 25 minutes, so I was gone. But the subs came in and did it amazing, and we were unlucky in the end. We just, like, if we had gotten that one chance, that we could have come on and won the game, but it wasn't to be. But like, that's kind of our team in a nutshell. There's so many young players coming through, and you know, we're close, but yeah, just to up that level now and grow on that. But yeah, we had a great cup run anyway. It was unfortunate in the end.
Congrats on a wonderful career, Marie. And I'd just like to ask you, in terms of the professionalism, and has it changed much since when you started to when you joined Treaty this year?
In terms of club level?
In terms of club level, yeah, the Women's National League, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose from the whole organisation of the league, like, there was such a huge improvement this year. Like, just even in terms of the media and just having so much reports out there this year was incredible. And like, I didn't grow up with that, you know. Even in my international career, there was none of that. There wasn't so much media attention, or we didn't get too much exposure. So it's brilliant to see that for the Women's National League. I think they've been more consistent this year. And then the level, like, yeah, I suppose every club, they're doing well. But, you know, like, the Women's National League obviously has its challenges as well. But overall, I think it is getting better. And I think each club is doing very well to raise the level. We're just trying to have an elite environment, and same down here in Treaty. So, yeah, it'll be interesting now, actually, because Dave has just left his position as well as manager at Treaty. So, yeah, I think just everyone is just looking to improve that level all the time.
And Marie, you mentioned there the media coverage of the women's game, and in particular you mentioned the international scene, which really wasn't covered up until the last few years. And really it was a case of when the women's players went on strike, that brought everything into focus, and that really was a moment in time that transformed how women's football was viewed in this country, wasn't it? It was a seismic moment.
Absolutely, and I just had left the squad in at the end of 2012, so like, it was just, I was really proud of the girls, to be honest with you, coming out like that in 2017, and it's just something that was kind of underpinning for a long time. Change wasn't happening. You're looking at other countries and how they're developing, and even our close neighbour Scotland really coming on. And so, you know, and still Ireland, we weren't moving, we weren't developing. So really, really important thing that they did in 2017. And I think it really kind of, it was great just to get that out because it put the spotlight there. And not only that, things have just followed. Things have gone in the right direction since with the 2020 campaign, Can't See, Can't Be. And, you know, it just, when you keep putting that spotlight on it, it's just going to improve conditions. You have to remember women's football and women's sport in general has lived a pretty oppressed time. I feel like women's sport is really just up and coming now, and it's really kind of getting the spotlight it deserves. It's really good to see.
It's also good to see, you're saying that, like the underage games being streamed, the cup finals being streamed, the Cork versus Shamrock Rovers game in particular was a very, very good game. And just showing the level that some of the kids below coming up, even that quality is starting to bump up over the last couple of years as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I would have liked to have seen more games streamed, but, you know, that's just me. I would like to see it out there more. It's good to see because, you know, even in my international career, there's not too much footage out there, you know, so even to get some games streamed in the Women's National League, brilliant. Like, let's see more. We were obviously in a lockdown. We're obviously going through a world pandemic, so it would have been great to see the technology that's there now is to use that more and to get more games in the Women's National League streamed than that. I think that's to come. That's next step, really, and just the quality of everything on that side as well. There's a lot of all the games were videoed, which is a hugely positive step as well. So there is a lot of footage out there now. Women's National League has its own YouTube page through the FAI YouTube page. So it's more accessible, and that's what you need. Hopefully things will just progress and progress year on.
Yeah. Well, progress is being made. What else would you like to see in terms of the domestic game to move it to the next level?
Yeah, I'd love to see, you know, a dedicated team in the digital marketing side. I know Garrett in the FAI is doing a brilliant job. I don't know the structures there at the moment. I don't know who's looking after what. It's certainly been more consistent this year, but I look a lot at what's going on abroad too, in America and in England, and of course with the FA, they have the FA player, and it just makes things so exciting to view. It's really impressive stuff where, you know, not only the digital marketing side of it, and, you know, the digital marketing is the future now, you know. Good content that's put out there. You feel like you get to know the players more. You get that insider view. Just to make it more attractive, because ultimately you have to give a good marketing package for any interested sponsors and whatnot. So, you know, you just have to make it more attractive, and you do that through the digital marketing. You do that through streaming good quality games and putting good quality out there.
Yep, fair points, no doubt about it. I guess, Marie, every time we hear about a player retiring, leaving a dressing room for the last time, for some it can be a decision they're comfortable with. Are you entirely happy about your decision, or is there a bit of you that says, oh, I'd love to give it maybe one more go?
I'm entirely happy. Yeah, I've played around with it the last couple of years for sure, and I'm entirely happy with it. I kind of made a decision towards the end of the season, and I sat around with the lads, with our management after the game, and, you know, I expressed my plans, and they were a little bit reluctant, but they're happy with it, and they wish me all the best. When you do retire, it does make you reflect back on your career, and it makes you think about all the people who got you there, all the people who do this unseen work behind the scenes in clubs throughout the country. You know, it's brilliant, all the things that people don't see. I'll be forever grateful for the things that got me to where I am. So I'm definitely leaving on a positive note anyway. I'm very grateful.
Yeah, and who are the people that did so much for you?
You can't help think of, from my very first teams, my local boys team. You know, you hear so many of girls who are playing on national teams now are playing, who've really furthered their careers, that they started off playing with the boys' teams, and I was the very same. So, you know, local people there, you know, just communities across the country, just they're so fantastic. And so just managers, coaches, all through my career, you know, Damien Walsh in Lifford Ladies, like I travelled from Atlaca and Limerick up to Ennis to play from 13 years of age, you know, for a couple of years until I moved out. And, you know, just people behind the scenes doing incredible work like that. My management at Hofstra University, Simon Ridioff, was amazing there, just to give me that kind of opportunity. And that kind of platform was fantastic. Played under excellent coaches like Simon and Paul Riley, who's a highly regarded coach in women's football in the world. Gary Book, another amazing coach in college. And I have so many people, I have so many management and coaches to thank, you know. So I'm really, really grateful experience I've had in Norway. And in the Women's National League. It's been lovely to come back, and I suppose it's been a different focus for me now, I guess. I haven't focused too much on my own career. I've had a different mindset in that, you know, that helps me just enjoy the game more. I've been more just looking to help players around me, and just enjoying having a team so close in Limerick. And I've really enjoyed the last few years, so I'm glad that, you know, I've ended it off with in my hometown and just really enjoyed the experience as well the last couple of years.
Okay, well, listen, well done on a terrific career. Marie Carton, many thanks for joining us on the RT Soccer Podcast. Conan, James, thanks for your company as well. Until the next time, bye from us all. Bye-bye.